Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight, No Chaser. This is going to be a different evening than we usually have. I am going to have guests, and there are multiple guests. I have guests from the West Coast, the South Coast, the East Coast. We are going to have a town hall this evening, talking about the importance of the arts in our community and globally. So I have them all on mute now. It's just me talking for a little while, and then I will add them on one at a time. I think the board is crowded up already, and it's getting to the end, so I'm going to have to move some people around to make sure I know who's calling in. However, I want to welcome you again to Lenny Godfrey Straight, No Chaser. I want to also do a little housekeeping so those people who are listening and didn't see the video on Facebook or, you know, did not check in to see what this episode was going to be about will know how to call in if they want to respond to our conversations tonight at the town hall meeting conversation. So you still call the same number. It's 516-453-6063, but you press the number 1. So I know that you want to be heard. You want to say hello. You want to answer a question or ask a question. We are on blogtalkradio.com/S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. You will hear some familiar voices tonight. I have some guests who have been on the show before. I've got guests who've never been on this show at all. I've got guests who've been calling in week after week, and they've been calling in. So this should be a great conversation. I'm going to start making everybody live, and I want to welcome you. Welcome to the show, my guest in Texas. Welcome to the show. I see a New York, I guess, zip code. Welcome to the show. I'm seeing zip codes that I'm not familiar with now, so you'll have to excuse me. I see a California zip code. I see some more New York zip codes. So I'm putting you all live in. And so now everybody, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give the last 2 numbers of your phone number, not to give everything away, and then ask you to just come in and say hello so we can get everybody on. There are about 8 or 9 of us on here already. Okay, so why don't we start with the last number being 74. 74.
Hi, Lenny. This is Celeste. Yes. I'm calling from Texas.
Oh, welcome, Celeste. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's so wonderful to hear your voice on the radio, even though I do hear it as we speak from time to time. Thank you so very much, and thank you for taking the time out to, you know, to come in and contribute to this town hall conversation. I'm going to go to the next guest. You stay live, and my next guest, it ends with 1-6. 1-6.
Hello, this is Julius Hollingsworth from New York.
All right, Julius, thank you very much. All right. Now the next guest ends with a 7-1.
Hello, everyone. This is Brenda from California.
Hello, Brenda. And how is the weather out there in California?
Weather's beautiful today. Nice and sunny.
Good. We've got some beautiful weather here on the East Coast also. We went up to 60 degrees, so we're catching up with you a little bit. And now we're going to go. Yeah, I know. Don't start with us, because we'll catch up with you by the summertime. All right. And now we're going to go to number 7070.
Recession risk and
7070. Okay, I'll put you on mute for a minute and let you figure out if you're ready to talk or not. We're gonna go to 10 at the end of the number. It's 10. Okay, I'll keep you on mute then. And the last number we're going to deal with today is 77. The last numbers on your phone number is 77. Hello? Okay. All right. So I will, on those last three numbers, I will then just call on you when you push the number 1. All right. That's when your final number is 7010 and 77. Okay, so with the ones that we have who are willing to talk right now, let's get into it. I decided that I was going to have this town hall conversation because of the simple fact that the things happened this week. We had a schedule. We had scheduled guests. They had a tragedy in the family, so we had to reschedule them. And instead of just canceling, I want the audience to know that I thought that I'd give everyone an opportunity to call in and talk about the impact of the arts globally. One of the things I was talking about before we got on the air is I decided to look around in my studio office and figure out what my office would be like if everything here that represented a bit of art was removed from the space that I am in right now. I want you to take a look at where you are now, in whatever room you are, however convenient it is, and think about all the things that appear in your room, whether it be pieces of furniture, whether it be it's something on the wall, it could be some kind of instrument. What would your life be if this piece of art or these pieces of art, photographs, posters, chairs, so many different things that we have in our spaces, we're not there. What would it be like for you? Why don't you start, Julius? You're our man of the hour. Why don't you start for me?
Well, I have a poster that deals with Catherine Dunham and Paul Robeson, and so there are art activists, and they saw history and their art as a continuation of their ability to shine a light on their communities. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, to shine the light for everybody to understand not only themselves, but their communities in a greater way.
So how would it be if you did not, what was the reason why you wanted this particular post today? You have Catherine Dunham and Paul Robeson. You have two people who are in their same generation. We grew up hearing about them and were fortunate enough to be around Ms. Dunham before she passed away. What would life be for you if you didn't have that reference?
Well, I think it would, But though that reference speaks to the ability to be connected to community and to imply if they can do it, that I can, you know, stand on those shoulders and encourage me to speak out on the truths that I think that need to be addressed in today's time.
What about you, Celeste? What do you think? Did you look around in your world, in your room, where you are, all the things that you have around there? What would life be like if a special piece or pieces were not there anymore? How would that work in you?
Well, I do have a lot of art in my office that I like to just sit and gaze at sometimes. And also, I yesterday I was soothed by art, the art of music. I had a Motown concert. You know, now with YouTube, we can listen to music anytime we want to. So every now and then I will throw myself a Motown concert by way of YouTube. Listen back to all the oldies but goodies and just be inspired by the artistry of those great musicians. And I thought about how, you know, their music, their artistry, their talents have just been the backbeat of my life all through my life. I've heard those songs or referred back to them as I got older. You know, like I said, when you want to hear the oldies but goodies, or you want to be inspired, or you want to conjure up memories, or you just want to hear some good music, I will listen to the Motown artist. So that is that's how I spent quite a bit of time yesterday, just having a Motown concert.
Isn't it amazing how much of the arts are integrated into our lives and how we just kind of reach out for it and don't even think anything about it? You know,
absolutely.
The freedom that we have to be able to do that. And thinking about, you know, as Julius was referring back to Ms. Robeson and Ms. Dunham and the activism of people like that and what that inspires you to do, how that gives you a voice, a sense of a voice. That you have the ability to have a voice, and that's replicated in a poster, which is a piece of visual art, again, that we take for granted because it's there for us to have it. It's so important that we recognize if I went around in this room and I started taking away the things that didn't have any artistic, that had artistic endeavor to create, I would have anything in the room, but maybe, well, I don't know if I have anything in this room, because even to make paper, you know, there's an artistry to make paper from wood, so everything would be gone almost, you know. What about you, Brenda? What about you? Where you're sitting?
Well, it's interesting. I have art in my office, and I was sitting here as I listened to you, and it's actually, there are pictures that were taken by someone that I framed, and they tell a different story. You know, they tell stories of snow-capped mountains and rivers flowing and beaches and hills and sunsets, and they're really, really important and special to me because they ground me. You know, and when I come in, you know, I'm in a really fast-paced job, and it gets really crazy, and I have them sit, you know, they're right across from me, and when I'm really having a moment, I can just sit and stare across at them, and it's very calming and soothing to me to feel that. And I was thinking about if those pictures weren't there and that wall were blank, I don't know what I would do.
I really don't know
because they mean that much to me, and they're that grounding for me.
I envision
that blank wall.
It's just one facet of our lives that's touched by it. And tonight before we're finished, I really want to touch on a lot of different things. I look at One of the things that I have in my studio office is I have a display of dolls.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of artistry that goes into creating dolls, and where do we think the influence that dolls have had on us, both females and males, those people who identify as both or either one, what kind of influence just the doll industry has on us so that, you know, we then have a reference point in which, you know, as children, the importance of what kinds of dolls we were given and what those dolls represented in our lives.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's really, really important. Celeste, do you remember the dolls when you were a child, what they represented for you?
Absolutely. I remember we used to create our own little dolls. Of course, you know, our parents would buy us dolls, but we would create dolls. I'm sure all of the women on the panel remember that. We would take a bottle, a Coke bottle, a soda bottle, and we would get some straw. I don't know now where we got this straw from. It was long, blonde, waverly straw. And we would take it and clip a clothespin on it. We'd stick it down in the middle of the hole in the bottle, and we'd put a clothespin in there, and that would be her long, blonde, flowing hair for our doll. So I don't know if I'm really, really, really dating myself, but we would make our dolls, and we would name them, and, you know, dolls were that's a good artistic creation for you to bring up, Lenny, you know, because we all grew up with dolls, and they just really helped us shape our lives and our image, and we would tell stories through the dolls, you know. We'd have like, you know, little theater. One person would have her doll, and we'd have a dialogue between the two dolls. So that playtime really helped it helped create who we were and helped us to express as children who we were or thought we were or who we wanted to be.
It's, you know, interesting. I was listening to what you were saying about the doll when you made the doll. Mm-hmm. And you know what stood out for me was when you said you took the straw and you made the long, you know, flowing golden hair or whatever. Because that is what we thought at that time.
Yes.
All and dolls. So when you said that, I was thinking back, all of them had to look like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But the influence, and so therefore we talked then a bit about the influence of art. Okay.
Yes.
And how important it is to have art, you know, the sculpting, the molding of a certain imagery when children are very small, and how important the arts are, because it is a sense of self-identity. There was a time when all of the dolls looked like Barbie, who was a white, blonde-haired, red lipstick, you know, perfectly shaped woman. And then this Barbie started getting a little chocolate, which was very interesting, you know.
Yes.
But they just looked like they dipped her in chocolate, but everything else looked like the other doll, you know. So then, you know, at this point in time, we're beginning now to see the imagery of people of color being more distinctive in their features and in their hairstyles and in their choice of dress. This is a very important element when we think about how our children formulate images of themselves. And, you know, we don't think about it. My grandmother used to make quilts, and also for
mine too.
As a child, she would also take pieces of material and formulate it into a little doll and stuff it with, you know, then it wasn't cotton. It was some kind of stuffing that they had in Florida that mm-hmm. they would stuff it. And it would be, and of course, me not, and it wasn't a store-bought doll. So I would look at it and say, well, Nana, what is this? You know, but the doll had was so many different, because it was patchwork, it had no complexion.
Yeah.
It had no real feature. And so it was an it's a universal doll. And
yes.
As a little girl, I just took, because my Nana gave it to me, I took it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was my doll. It didn't look like anybody, and it looked like everybody.
Mm. Well, you know.
Yes,
you know,
Julia.
I was listening to y'all talk about the dolls. I had a good old G.I. Joe and the Hulk. And the Hulk would jump all across the universe, and it'd be in Saturn,
yes,
and having wars and kissing Venus, and oh my God, it's the thing that with those dolls, those images, me, the magical part about it is that it opened you up to use your imagination, that anything was possible, and that you could be in a completely different world. It's just like with the music that she was talking about, that when you put that music on, it completely transforms wherever you happen to be. It could you could be in a really sad place or something that ain't got nothing to do with nothing. But then when you put that music on, that's right. So the magic of art to me is the ability to help us become all that we want to be, right? Even for just a moment, to transport us into a world that we never, ever dreamed before. And then with the art, as you've been always talking about, Lenny, to really be able to do the art consistently, you have to have a kind of, like with music, you have to know how to count.
Yeah.
So it is intricate. Right? It's intricately connected to math. It's all kinds of stuff, movement and keeping your exercise together. So art, I think, is, like you've been saying, is an educational tool that is magic for a whole lot of people that they're not even aware of.
Absolutely. The importance of the freedom that you have with imagination, the importance is, I think, is that we don't control the imagination with one particular kind of style, but we allow the children to use their imaginations. And that one particular thing, I think as we've grown as a nation and as a world, the dolls that represent people have now become varied in their style and their look and all of those things. And I think that's an advantage that was not there earlier on. There were stereotypical dolls that represented, the Black Americans that were collectibles and are collectibles now, but they were not the preference that anyone wanted to grow up to be. And then there was one preferential doll, that was there.
Yeah.
Now there we have the choices, and that's how we've grown. And the arts has helped that to happen. We don't realize it's subliminal, but we don't realize how much the arts has helped us develop and create a voice, an international voice for ourselves, just in creating different looks and personalities and the things that our children play with and the things that we played with. When I have another thing that I want to talk about last week I had my wonderful friend Jane George on, and she brought in the fact that she had a sweater on that she had created herself, and that was a piece of art for her, fabric art. And we'd gotten into the discussion where she talked about her great aunt and her grandmother was showing her how to sew because they did quilts. Well, yes, my grandmother did quilts. You see that there is a similarity of cultures that we still have to recognize. Have there are lots of differences, but there are similarities. We've all kind of passed on our culture through a lot of different types of art. Storytelling, really big storytelling, was something that the Native Americans did. You know, their heritage was done, was not done written in books. It was oral. So a lot of their history was done orally, and a lot of history is lost when their voices were stymied and they weren't allowed, you know, to do that. Talk about, if you could, Brenda, talk to me about what storytelling was in your family, and then Celeste, and then, you know, Julius. What was storytelling like? What did it represent? Because it was a real big thing in my – I had a lot of big storytellers in my family.
Well, it was so funny because I have, you know, such a mixture of cultures in my family. So dependent, I always say dependent upon whose house you were at Thanksgiving, what kind of story you had. But they always – the commonality among all of them was they all went back to a place of where things were, you know, what it was like, you know, reminding us of how, where we came from, you know, and not just that we all came from slavery, but that we came from greatness, you know, and going back into the history. I remember one of my great grandfather in particular used to talk about, you know, being, you know, Creole and that whole concept and nature of that, and that combination of the kind of lives they lived through and some of the different challenges they had. And I used to sit and wonder sometimes how, you know, they say they had, you know, we had a different challenge because we didn't know what we were. We didn't know where we really belonged. And so it was trying to find that belonging. And some of the challenges that some of them had, you know, I had a, I had an aunt that passed. And when I say passed, she passed for another color, you know. And so that struggle and just hearing those stories, and it used to make me sometimes fearful. It used to make me sometimes fearful because they would tell, you know, tell us how they have to travel and be worried, and they were always worried. They always told a story about being worried about my aunt and the different journey with her. So I think that those are the stories that stand out to me kind of the most. So just that struggle and their journey. And like I said, it depends upon whose house you were at Thanksgiving, because as I went to my maternal side, then it was all about the farm. You know, all about how you, all about growing up on the farm and how you had the cows and the hens and the turkeys and what you had to do to make it and how you sustained off the land. That you, everything was sustainable from the land. You really didn't need to have to buy anything because everything was right there in your backyard. So we grew up hearing a lot of those stories because you grew your food, you had your animals. When you needed to eat a chicken, you killed it. When you need eggs, you got them, right?
Now you're in Northern California now. Where distinctively was your family when you were younger?
My family was, so I had family in Kentucky, Louisiana, and Pennsylvania.
Okay. All right. That's a
lot
of different kind of cultures going over there.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yes, very much so.
What about you, Celeste? What about those storytellers? You get that, you know, from somebody in your family because you're a great storyteller yourself. You said on a program that one of the things that you like to do when you're about to tell a story is that you go to the children's section of the bookstore and look at stores. Tell me, talk to me about a little bit about that, Celeste.
Okay. Right, I do. You're right. I do have storytellers in my family. When I started to write, especially about historical things like Camp Logan, which came out of storytelling in the family. But when I started to write about Camp Logan and other historical pieces, I would go to the children's, and I still do. I haven't been to the library now in quite some time because, you know, we can get so much on the Internet now. But then, you know, you couldn't. You had to go to the library, which I loved. And I started out going to the adult section of the library to, you know, to read about different topics, you know, of research. And then I don't know how I discovered the children's library. I don't know, maybe with my kids. I think that's how it started when they were young, and I would go down to the lower level with the children's library and, you know, get books from them. And then I started to look through and see interesting topics, you know, that I could use. So I started to go to the children's library to get a good, clear sense of whatever the topic was that I was going to tackle, to see if I could find some kind of children's book on it. And usually you can find a children's book on almost anything. And there is this quote that I ran across that I like to remember. And it says, when you're writing a novel, when you get ready to write a novel and you want to write a novel for adults, if you think it will be too hard for the adults to understand, well, then write it for children, which means the children can understand anything that you tell them. But the adults, you know, we have so many biases and things built up in our minds that, you know, we may not be able to, you know, take it in. So, yes, I do. I do that. I love to go to the children's sections of the library and pull out books on anything that I'm thinking about. If I'm thinking about outer space or if I have a character, often that's what it is. It's some character that I need to know more about, his particular occupation. It may be a scientist that's in the play. It may be somebody, maybe an astronaut. It may be a soldier. It may be a teacher. So when I just want to get the bare bones of what these occupations are about, I go to the children's library, and I love it.
What about your family? Was there any particular person who told stories that inspired you to write? I know that you were always, you know, you always loved books and everything like that. Was anybody in your family that inspired you?
Just like your dad, I'm sure you've heard some of the same stories I've heard. My dad's Army stories. I have a couple of plays that grew out of his Army stories, a one-man show, and then a two-man show that grew out of his Army stories. And his brother, my uncle, he was in the Army, so they would talk their Army stories. And then my dad was a cowboy. He'd talk his cowboy stories. And then my mother and my father, they both were, you know, raised on a farm, you know. So mama would talk about, you know, being raised in the country, of which she hated to be a country girl and to hate the country. She just never, you know, she was afraid of snakes and she didn't want to do this and she didn't want to do that. But they both had stories to tell, but Daddy was always telling his stories. If you asked Mama, she'd tell you, you know, some stories, give you some information. But we knew Daddy's stories by heart. I mean, he would tell them almost every day. So he was a storyteller.
I forgot about that. You made me remember when you said the soldier stories. I remember that from my dad and being around the military. I always think about my grandparents, but I forgot about the jumping out of the plane stories all the time. Airplanes, always jumping out of the airplane, 4 o'clock in the morning, and all the stories that go with that. Oh my God, you made me remember that. I was really remembering.
Your dad worked for the air. He was an airman.
Yes, 101st. So that you just, when you,
wow,
you said that, oh my God. Now I remember the airplane jumps. You right go down there in the morning time. You have to be there like 3 or 4 in the morning because that's when they would jump.
Wow. Now see, you could write a children's book about that.
Oh, I don't like, well, he did it. I didn't. I was out there at the night time scared. I want to do it now, but I was always afraid of people jumping out of those planes. If you see 10 or 15 men jumping out of the plane in the middle of the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, how fascinating that, you know, right now my imagination, I'm seeing in my mind all these people coming, jumping out of planes, and what a wonderful
mm-hmm.
story.
Me too.
You know, what a wonderful story. What's a
yeah.
wonderful story that can come, that comes from that.
That
especially
imagery.
It's not anything that we think that it's in our history that much. And again,
what's
it's developing our history a little bit more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about you, Julius? What about the storytellers in your family?
Well, you know, my grandmother, she didn't tell stories as much as, you know, she'd say, oh, come on, scratch my back here. You know, and you got, ooh, yeah, get it. And sing songs. She came from a family of like 4 sisters from like Orangeburg, South Carolina, and they used to sing and harmonize. So they that was something that was like that we kind of did.
Mm-hmm.
With my mom and me and my sister, and my father would, you know, talk a little bit about his time with the Montford Point Marines. Montford Point Marines were the first Black Marines during World War II.
Wow!
So he would talk about, you know, how you know, not so easy the officers were during that time, and I think he was like stationed in the Philippines or someplace, you know. So it was, you know, I mean, though that's my big, you know, stories that I, you know, would talk about. But yeah, those, you know. Is more around the singing and Dad, you know, dropping in his war stories, you know.
It is really fascinating for us to talk about to see the similarities of the storytelling that goes along in families and how we experience the lifestyle of our parents and uncles and aunts
mm-hmm.
and how they communicated it to us through their stories. I was a big listener. I love to listen to get around and listen to the people talk about what they used to do when they were a bit younger and how my parents, when the war broke out, my mother then traveled with my father on his stateside service and before he went to Europe and what that was like and the fact that this is the thing that got me. The plane that my mother was supposed to catch to go to out west, it was Colorado or something place where when my dad was there, there was a traffic accident that did not allow her to get on that plane, and that plane crashed and everybody died in it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my.
And my mother, she had never missed anything in her life. And because of that, I wasn't born yet. So because she was in this traffic, you know, situation, well, boom, you know, it made possible for years later for me to be born. But the stories mm-hmm. about that and then my father wanting to be a pilot, but going to Tuskegee at the very beginning and then having to leave because his family had illness and how much when I was a young girl, when we would go to travel on planes, how he would ask if I could peek into the pit And then he would point things out, and the pilots would just be amazed because my father would know some of the instrumentation. And they didn't realize that a person of color had that kind of knowledge, you know, and that was years and years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, so many different things, how you remember all these stories. I tell you, there could be just a series of storytelling episodes that we could start that would be amazing, revealing all of the history that we have. It's
true.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, Lenny, when you're talking about that, about her, she's never being late, and then and being caught up in that traffic accident.
Mm-hmm.
When some crazy stuff that happened to me, it was like there are certain things that are supposed to happen in your life.
Yeah.
Now what you do with those things.
Yeah.
But that we're here for a particular journey. Now, what you do with the certain things that you're supposed to do, now what comes out of that is on you. But that you're supposed to be there for a certain thing, it's like, oh, my God, out of nowhere,
totally
that happened. That's good. That's got to be God directing your steps, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you realize, you know, at some point in time that the journey is the path is there for you. It's what you do with the path. And what I always say to people, what is yours, no one can take from you. Nothing.
Yes.
So you should never be afraid of anybody taking anything from you. Because if it's in your path, if God has made that happen, if your religious God has made it happen, then it's going to happen for you. Now, what you do with that is interesting. What you do with that. One of the things that I thought was a very interesting thing, we talk about, we have a writer here, and, you know, I mean, Celeste is a prolific writer. I really have to give her receipts. She's written over 40 plays. She's written short stories, children's plays, adult plays, musicals, and she's still doing all of those things. She just got the award for Life Achievement Award from the TIL in Texas and the Texas Institute of Letters. And so with all of that, I know that writing is such an important thing. And as I start, you know, talking about this again, I'm here to tell you that we're almost down to 15 minutes left. Now, see how fast this goes already?
Wow, well, you're having fun.
I'm telling you, you know, you talk about the arts and it goes. And one of the things that I started thinking about was the book that I know the most, the what I warm up to the Lord's Prayer. I think about, you know, the Lord's Prayer, teaching children the Lord's Prayer. When I had my chorus, I taught the children the Lord's Prayer because they didn't know it. The teaching of the Lord's Prayer at night as a prayer has stopped being a practice. And then I started thinking about the book, the Bible, and the different kinds of Bible that there are. We have the Christian Bible and the New Testament, the Old Testament. But then I started thinking about I guess it's the Quran, and then the T-A-N-A-H. Now, I don't know how to say that. Tana?
What is
That's the Jewish Bible. It's the Jewish Bible.
Okay.
It's acronyms for Torah, prophets, Torah, which is the law, prophets, and writing. And I really want to go into, you know, really defining and that a little bit more, understanding all of us have these books in which we have our religious reference.
Right.
But it means the same to all of us. So there's a difference, but there's a similarity. And there's, you know, I'd love to have if anyone around knows anything about the different kinds of Bibles, and I wish they would, you know, write me on Facebook, write me on Messenger, do something to me, write me on my website, www.lennygoffrey.com. And, I want to create a panel to talk about the art of doing that, because there's so much artistry in that. We all have these books that created that we kind of created the arc of our lives around. And again, that's a piece of art that we use all the time that we don't even think about.
And you know what's interesting too, you say there are all the different books and all the different religions. If you've ever read, you know, a few of some of them, there are some commonalities, but someone for whatever reason has made some changes, because I think 6 months ago ventured into looking at the Mormons, some young ladies knocked, and they had their book with them. And I, you know, they were young, so I wanted to at least give them, you know, just they're young, college students, so they came in. But after they left and I started to read through there, I said, there, half of this I don't believe and half of this I don't agree with, but there are some commonalities in here because they're still talking about Christ.
Yeah.
You know, but it's but they're saying it a different way, but it's still the same.
Yeah.
And Jewish. So there is very much commonality, but someone else has decided to make it different for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, we, you know, we concentrate on differences and not similarities, you know, and there's a balance there that needs to happen. One of the things that, you know, we're not going to have enough time tonight to talk about it, is that I want to talk about the influences that we have on our politics and the influences that we have on the identity of gender today. You know, I mean, we all have.
My goodness.
It's a big conversation about that.
You started this late, Minnie.
I'm not going to start. You know, there's going to be another town hall. You know, I'm going to give.
That's a big one.
Oh, yes, it is. I think they're gigantic subjects that we all want to just hear different opinions about. You know, there's no one set thing, but if we hear how different people feel about it, maybe we can understand each other a little bit more, and through the arts how that is communicated, how in and you know, the different kinds of descriptions that we have for ourselves, the different things that we in the Black race have had many different things, references to ourselves over the years, the word, you know, color, the word Negro, the word Black, the word African American, Black, you know, and all of those words, the Latino, Hispanic, you know, what is the identifying word? What is the identifying word for the gay population and the gay community? It's just, there's so many things, and how do we communicate that through the arts, and how is it helpful? Is it harmful? Are we utilizing that, you know, in a healthy way? So many things to talk about. So this is the beginning. Of a town hall conversation where we can just, people can listen. We've got, the board is full, and there are people who are listening. They haven't come on to ask any questions or say anything, but they're listening to different stories, I think, that they hadn't heard before, you know, and how people are similar in our cultures, and how people are different in our cultures. And I think it's a wonderful way of having a conversation every once in a while, breaking out of the tradition that I have of bringing my wonderful guests in, but also having a panel of people who want to just talk about a lot of things that the art, how the art enhances their lives globally. It's just, you know, it's not just our country, it's globally. And I think that is one of the reasons why I believe that theater is so responsible for bringing us certain messages.
I would agree with you. I've not gone a lot of places, but I have been to Hong Kong, and I have been to Russia, Germany, and a few places. And the one thing that's there, that's always there, there's some theater, there's some dance, there's some art, and people all love it. No matter where you are, no matter what language they're speaking, there's something in the music, there's something in the art, there's something in the paintings. And if you look at countries like Russia, I hate to say Russia right now, but places like that, if you look at how their buildings and the way that the decor, and Hong Kong, I mean, the art.
So artful.
You know,
I've got a question coming up. I'm going to open it up. Hello, this is Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser. Why don't you identify yourself, tell us where you are, and what's your comment, question, or hello? Hello. That voice sounds familiar. Here we are there.
This is Patricia Snyder from New York State.
Yes.
I have a question. why you're talking about the art and you're saying globally. Why do we not get more support from our government in terms of the arts in the United States of America?
Wonderful question, Patricia. I think that one of the things that we have to do as a people, because we don't get the kind of support that we're looking for, is to try to be far more vocal about it. To be honest, in our business, we are hesitant to be strongly vocal with our government because we as artists are afraid that it will hurt what we're trying to create in our careers. But I think we have to realize that it's far bigger than us, that it's far bigger than individual careers, that we have to take up a vocal arm, not a physical one, but really start taking up the idea that we need to have the kind of support that we can have that is not censored, that is that gives us a freedom of choice, but gives us the ability to be at our best financially so that we can have a variety of things. Everything doesn't have to be as brilliant as Shakespeare or Lorraine Sansbury or, you know, or Celeste B. Walker, or it doesn't have to be that perfect, but we have to be able to have the variety. You know, Tennessee Williams is there, Arthur Miller is there, August Wilson is there. You know, all of these people are there. I remember being young, and there was I can't recall his name. There was a playwright that was up at the O'Neill at the time. He was known by one name, and I always wonder what has happened to him. Did he had to regulate and shut off his voice? I think Patricia, it's a fabulous question. I don't think that there's one particular.
I'd like to give you an example, and I would love to hear from Celeste. I was speaking to a friend who's a director in the Swedish theater, and she told me that she was given 6 months to direct a show. It was in rehearsal for 5.5 months and in technical rehearsals for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Now, here in the United States, we're lucky when we get 4 weeks to rehearse a new show. Why do you think the Swedish government supports the theater that way? Because they have subsidized theater, sometimes 60 people in a repertory company. I mean, this great nation of America, why can't we work like that?
Well, Patricia, I think, that is such a great question. Wouldn't I love that, a government like that as a writer and all of us artists? Wouldn't we love to have a government like that? I think it's important to the Swedish people. And obviously, they lobby to let their government know that this is important to the Swedish soul. They understand that the arts nourish the soul and the whole person. America is more materialistic, you know. We're after things and money. And I think that what we should do, is we should have a lobby. Maybe we have one. I don't know. We should have a lobby in Washington as artists to let the government know how important it is to us as artists to have our art supported. Everybody else has a lobby, you know, the oil companies, the all other kind of industries, the communications, tech. And I think we should have a very strong lobby. And we should really let them know that whoever, Democrat, Republican, Independent, Green, the Green Party, whoever supports the arts and lets us know that they're going to support the art, and whoever puts the arts into their platform and into their campaign, that's who we're going to vote for. That's who's going to have our attention. We have to let them know that it is important, because it's obviously it's not important to the politicians, you know.
I would agree with you, Celeste. I think, Lenny, I don't know if you recall a few weeks ago when I was on with you, we were talking about arts being taken out of the school. That, you know, whenever they need to cut funding, the first place they start to cut is art.
Yeah.
There's a different appreciation. The first thing when they look at what do we want to cut, everything is always about the arts. Because there's a different they don't have the appreciation for
art. No, they don't have the respect. They don't have the respect.
And the example is
if they would look around in their offices, their offices would be there if there wasn't any art in it. You know, everything that there's the seat that they sit on created by an artist.
Yeah.
You know.
And they to take pictures with celebrities.
Yes, they do. They love to take pictures, but they don't help the celebrities get their own power in our own industry, and in order to be able to not to perfect.
It would be good to have a bunch of politicians on and talk to them about the arts and see what they know. All three parties, independent, Republican, Democrat.
That would be a great challenge.
That.
Well, I guess I'll have to try to work on that. But I have to tell you all, at this point in time, we are down to the last about 2 minutes. I knew that this was, it goes really fast when we are really having great conversations. This is a wonderful idea, and I'm going to continue it. I don't know. I hope to be able to do it next next week. We are going to have interesting back to our guests. We're going to have the Men of Boys High coming in. It is an organization that where the graduates of Boys High School in Brooklyn have come together. They are now retired judges. Some are lawyers. Some are architects, executives. They've all come together, and they recognize how much education in the arts has influenced their lives, and they want they've created an organization where they can give back to their community, and they're going to come in and talk to me about that.
Wonderful.
Next week. I am so proud to say that my husband is one of the founders of that organization, and I'm very proud of the fact that he really thought about giving back at this point in time in his life. I'm very proud of him for that. And with that said, I am going to thank all of you for being on this wonderful town hall conversation. I thank you, Celeste Bedford Walker. I thank you, Brenda, California. I thank you, Julius from New York City. I thank you, Patricia. I thank you, the guests that have not come in but were listening. The board is full. I have nothing to thank to say but thanks, and I knew that this was going to be an absolute wonderful conversation. And now I only have 90 seconds to say thank you very much. Tune in to Lenny Gosch's Straight No Chaser next week for the Men of Boys High. And hopefully I can convince all my wonderful guests to come back at another time, maybe next month or the month after. Thank you very much, and have a good evening. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight,
fever in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby.